Romania. She was 6 years old. The armies of the Second World War threatened. She learned her mother had a small packet of poison hidden in her purse and was determined to eliminate the family rather than have them fall into the hands of Russians if overtaken by the advancing army. By the time she was 11, she and her family arrived in the United States with a distinct desire to finally belong. This brilliant memoirist work is an account of a family's courage as they fought for survival during desperate times and depicts their frustrations, often humorous, and ultimately successful struggles as the new immigrants to the United States. The book, Uncertain Survival, the author, Julia Brooks, a graduate of Cedar Crest College mathematics program. Julia somehow transforms you into a participant in this adventure. You are not a bystander, but rather you take a journey along with her. The reader is inspired by family love and determination. This is WDIY 88.1 Lehigh Valley Public Radio, and you are tuned in to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host Kate Scuffle, we share this adventurous and intriguing story authored by Julia Brooks. Incidentally, book signings will take place at Barnes & Noble in Bethlehem Store April 4th from 11 to 1, and in the Whitehall Store April 14th from 1 to 3. Julia, we welcome you.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you here with us. We were just saying before the show, I have to agree, when I read the book, I couldn't put it down. I thought, oh, I've got time. I'll read a bit here and there and pick it. I tore through it and was pretty emotional by the end. But you've said that it's something you've worked on for almost 20 years.
Yes, and several different versions. Mm-hmm. And each time I did write, I did discover a new phase of the book that I had not remembered before. One thing awoke a memory of something else.
Interesting. And did what about this final way of telling the story felt right to you?
Well, I thought it flowed and did not leave anything out. And that was my certain aim, you know, to make it seem convincing and to share the story with the reader.
It's interesting because although you said an earlier version might have been written in a more of a child's language, but this particular version, what's stunning to me is I felt pulled in, as George said in the intro, to seeing the story through your child's eyes, the narrator, in a way that made it feel like it was unfolding. You know, it wasn't as if I was hearing a history. This was something that was unfolding, and I was on the edge of my seat throughout the whole story. But for you, I mean, do you find that you're... Well, it's back up for our audience. Tell us a little bit about the basic... Your family, you're 6 years old.
Yes. And things were going fairly well for my family, but the my uncle... One of them was recruited into the German army and was wounded. The other one had been working in Germany trying to make his way to a port because he had married an American visitor to our country in Romania, which, by the way, was at one time part of Austria-Hungary. And so they experienced... being my one uncle, the one who was impressed into the army, was wounded and came back to Romania, to Banat, as we called it, the section that had been given to Romania at the end of the war when Austria-Hungary was broken up. So it was a precarious situation where we were, because Romania at that time had been allied with Germany, had furnished the oil for Germany's war machine. And so I did experience the fact that I had an uncle who was working as an impressed mechanic in a German factory to fix the machines and the vehicles. And he's the one who was entrapped because he was trying to make his way to a boat to America. The other one was wounded and came back home to with a steel plate in his brain area and cerebral area. And then we found out he was supposed to go back to his post in the army. And we were appalled. But, you know, other than that, the war did not affect me until we learned that Romania had switched sides and was now part of the Russian and Allied Axis.
And your family, which had been, I had not known a lot about, your family would have considered itself, it's culturally, the community would have been a German cultural community in Romania. So you had the Romanians who are not particularly going to look out for your community should things fall apart.
Right.
Germany, it's towards the end of the war. There's issues there. Russia's encroaching. And you're not looking to be treated well by the Russians.
Oh, for sure. We were going to be the first German-speaking people they would encounter on their sweep westward. They were chasing the German army back to Germany. And that was not going to be a happy situation for us.
Julia, to clarify some of these things, could you read about a minute's worth or so of the book? I think you've chosen the first chapter or portions passage. Of that, the passage from the first chapter.
It's actually I called it the turning point.
Yes.
Because it was when I first became aware of the danger we were in. The rumble of the wheelbarrow on the brick-paved sidewalk that ran along the edge of the unpaved road to the village marketplace kept us from hearing the uproar until we were nearly there. When Mari finally noticed it, she abruptly set down the barrow and grabbed my arm to keep me from going ahead. I felt her body tense as she clutched me to her, while she huddled against a nearby building and strained to listen. The screaming and shouting suddenly gave way to one man's angry voice, motioning me to stay put and be quiet. Mari let go of my arm and crept slowly forward on tiptoe, her head leading the way while the stiff petticoats flared out behind her. She stopped just short of the corner and stood listening while I kept my place, impatient to know what was happening. I had no idea what these men were shouting, but knew that Mari had been required to learn their language at school and would understand. All I could do was listen to the level and tenor of the sound, and it was frightening.
Wonderful. Well, that surely sets up the whole scenario of what is about to occur, and the joy and the fear, all of the emotions that were involved in the rest of the book, I can guarantee that. And it is so interesting to understand that period of time, even though, as a in history, I don't understand as much as I want to. But in chapter 10, you and your sisters were in the British Zone in North Germany. That was June of 1946,
right.
And it was a displaced persons camp. For a young person to be in a displaced person camp, can you tell us some of your thoughts?
Well, it was a refuge, but it was a leaky and uncomfortable refuge. And the food was appalling. You know, we were being fed by the Red Cross and some other relief organizations. But there were people, we suspected, who were taking the good food from the top and substituting things that were almost inedible. For instance, we had frozen or dehydrated potatoes that had been frozen before they were dehydrated, and therefore they were black. And when you reconstituted them and tried to cook them, the stink was appalling.
Oh, my.
So, you know, you had to force yourself to really get some nourishment because, well, even dehydrated potatoes have some nourishment, but not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's interesting for the listeners. So you go from a six-year-old girl who the war has barely touched except for your uncle's experiences at some point, but with the shifting winds of the war, as things change and the Russians are coming, things become vulnerable, and your family decides it's time to go. It's time to get out. You're not going to be there when the Russians arrive. And your mother ends up, for a great part of the book, kind of on the move with you three girls making decisions in the moment. Goes to a train. The train's not running. We're not crossing the border today. Okay, we'll get a truck. We'll get horses. We'll get a wagon. We'll go somewhere else and try and get into Austria. That it was mind-boggling to me. Can you give us like the what that felt like for you as a child, this sense of...
Well, I felt that she was going to take care of things because she always did. For instance, we were in this train station in Budapest, and the Allies had bombed all the bridges across the Danube except for one, and there was no civilian traffic across that bridge. So people just kept piling up and piling up. But there were still some bridges left in the city where you could take a streetcar or get a wagon across. So she went out into the country on her own. And fortunately, she could speak Hungarian because she grew up when the country was still Austria-Hungary. And so she was able to talk a farmer into coming and... giving us a ride
across the civilian bridge.
That's right.
Or a footbridge. And she literally took the last bits of jewelry she had to bring other people away with you,
exactly.
Didn't she?
Yes, she had nothing left except her wedding ring after she did that.
It's interesting. I know we're going to take a break in a moment, but it's interesting to me, too. And I was on the edge of my seat. I felt like the child, the daughter, with her thinking... the number of options at any given moment, and she seemed to have an unerring, it had to be terrifying for her, but she had an unerring instinct. She made the right choices. She trusted her gut, it seemed.
Yes. And, you know, I appreciated the fact that she was always there to think of something and to be able to do certain things like teach in Austria to help us get out of the... displaced persons camp there where people were just dying of diseases because
the conditions.
Sanitary conditions, yes.
This memoir is absolutely sensational. We both of us read it. We were fighting for the book at one point to be able to finish that chapter. So I'm ever so grateful that these memories are cemented now in a book form. And we can hear more of the stories, again, as we talked at Barnes & Noble's in Whitehall and in Bethlehem. We shall certainly learn more of Julia's revisit to her former home in Austria and her thoughts on introductions into American ways of life. And if the family was always there, Mom and Dad were always the core, and your two sisters, Ilsa and Gerlinda, and yourself, we're on the move, so to speak, constantly. So we'll hear more about that right after this salient message.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
This is WDIY 88.1 Lehigh Valley Public Radio, and you are tuned into Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I remain George Miller, and of course, my wife is co-host, Kate Scuffle, and we're here talking and chatting with Julia Brooks, whose new book, Uncertain Survival, is ready for you to read, and you must do it.
Julia, just a real quick note for our listeners. Uncertain Survival is also available on Amazon, Kindle, etc., mm-hmm. is correct?
So that is.
And in the Barnes & Nobles, etc.
Exactly.
Actual bookstores.
Yes.
Something else that intrigued me, we were talking again a little bit before the show about, you know, out of this great journey, characters, places, the things that happen, and in digging through those memories to share them with us, what had struck you? And you mentioned your parents' altruism. Can you talk a little about that?
Yes. My father risked his life several times just to help others. One experience was in Romania when our city was being bombed, and there was a burning building, and people were just milling around, and they were saying, where's the superintendent? They couldn't find her. So my father ran into that building, into the basement, and found the room. And as he was coming out with the woman in his arms, because she had become unconscious, a pipe broke from the corridor ceiling and hit him on the head. And he almost dropped the woman, but he staggered up and he made it out of the building. And so that was one of the times. Another time was when we were in the U.S. and there was a hurricane, the first we had ever experienced in New Jersey. And our neighbor had one building that she owned, and that was her only source of income. She was elderly. And she sort of semaphored to us while we were having our lunch, and he went over, fought his way across to her house, and she said that the tiles on the roof in the building that she owned, which was next to us, were being ripped off, and she was afraid she was going to lose her only source of income. And he went up on the roof in that storm and took some tar paper and nailed it down. And, you know, we were petrified that we were going to lose him there. But he did other things. He finally managed to get some hold of some apples, because we were all, my sisters and I, were starved for things like that. And he found somebody who was weeping because his wife had tuberculosis and he couldn't get any food for her. He was going to try and trade something. And so he was unsuccessful. So my father gave him that whole little suitcase of apples and came home empty-handed. Imagine how he must have felt when he encountered his family empty-handed. But, you know, my mother finally understood why, and we thought he was a hero.
It's a beautiful account of when he does come home without the apples, because it was clear that the children desperately needed the nutrition, needed fruit. You're all getting, you're scrawny, you're sickly, there's disease around. And you can tell there's this moment of that she trusts enough to listen, like, tell me why, this isn't good. And when he's done, you're all just practically in tears, and she's so completely, it's like, right, all right then, I do understand. It's very moving that they knew each other. You can tell they know and respect each other enough.
Yes.
And through this, to have learned to trust that in each other, you know.
Yeah, so he was very giving mm-hmm. sort of person. But, you know, he wasn't with us on that whole journey right. when we escaped, because he was pressed or impressed
right.
into the German army. And the only thing that saved him was running away, he finally deserted because he was supposed to be part of a shooting squad. And he couldn't take that. And he risked his life and managed to get away.
That's a chilling part of the book, too. He was to be part of a firing squad that were going to execute 30 villagers in retribution.
Yes.
And put himself at the end of the line and scanned and was aware of watching of how could he get away. There were woods. How far can I get into them? If I don't take the gun, I won't have the weight. Climbs a tree to avoid the bloodhounds crossing. I was just... It's breathtaking. But it's interesting that later on you also talk about there's a sense of German heritage and culture and the best of the German culture that your father respected deeply. And it had to be interesting. It was an interesting and a brave choice to make, I just can't imagine doing it.
Yeah, because he had lost faith in what was being done. You know, the execution of 30 young men and crippled old men, and some were just barely able to stand. You know, it just was slaughter. He wasn't going to participate in it.
If you would be kind enough, Julia, to read another section of your book, we can capture another moment that that you deem certainly affecting. And it is very affecting when you're reading through this and you're living that moment with her.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, this part here is after we're in the United States and I'm having my interview with the official who is going to help make me a citizen. And it's he was able to take some time to ask me questions because normally he would do 40 people at a time, but because of a certain circumstance, I was the only person that he was inducting.
Mm-hmm.
He asked me, how it felt to be to have arrived in the United States. And I said, as a child, you feel as if you're stepping into a kind of wonderland where everything is better than what you've had before. For people like my parents, who didn't have control of their lives for such a long time, I'd say the most exciting thing probably was freedom to make their own decisions. I paused for a moment. That can also be frightening, especially in the beginning, when you don't know the lay of the land. I thought back to the miserly rich women for whom my mother had cleaned house, my father's shabby treatment by the two textile owners, and the exorbitant rent our first landlord had charged us. There are people who try to take advantage of your unfamiliarity with things, I added, but most Americans are very generous and helpful. He nodded and continued to look at me expectantly. I cast about for some more to say. He said, I hope that I, not wanting to let my daughters go out on dates or use makeup, are two examples of that come to mind of the cultural things that you try to get adapted to.
Mm-hmm.
He smiled back. I hoped I'd given him enough, but he was not yet done with me. As he pushed the naturalization form and the pen to my side of the desk, and how do you feel now about being here? I stared through the window behind him, gathering my thoughts. When we first arrived in this country, our accents and way of doing things set us apart from other children. But now I feel this is where I belong. And with that, I picked up the pen and signed my name on the dotted line.
And this apparently is where you belong.
I feel that way.
We thank you very much for joining us here on Lehigh Valley Art Salon. Julie Brooks new book, Uncertain Survival, will have book signings at the Barnes & Noble Bethlehem store April 4th from 11 a.m. to 1, and in the Whitehall store April 14th from 1 to 3 p.m. Julia, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And special thanks to our technical engineer, Steve Aronson, who provides us with Adventures into Radio World Mania every moment during our broadcast. I just wish he wouldn't kick me under the council, the radio council, when I cough. Thanks, Uncle Stevie.
Welcome.